Do you know that Taylor Swift's new album goes out today, right? You've heard?
I did not hear this. This is your breaking news to me.
See, you're kind of playing it off really well because it was leaked. Somebody actually leaked Taylor Swift's new album ahead of time, and I was wondering how you did it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Plausible deniability is what I'm always going for here. And working with Taylor has been a real joy over the last. So we're trying this new thing where we're introducing the album in like kaleidoscope covers so that everybody has to buy a different one. And then we're going to put a new Garanimal on each cover so that basically they match your outfit.
I'm sorry. Garanimal?
Yeah.
You went that's to an
X reference. That's a Gen X reference right there. That's classic Gen X reference.
Yeah, nope. Yeah, that tells you how old we are.
Just remember, everybody, your story to tell. Tell it well. I'm just old.
And now, for your listening pleasure, here's Polizzi and Rose, covering the week of media, marketing, and digital content news. This Old Marketing. Take it away, boys.
Hello, friends. Welcome to This Old Marketing, proudly brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. And that's right, I'm Robert Rose, and welcome to our show, episode number 424. And it is for Friday, April 19th, 2024. And with me, as he always is, that's right, my colleague, my friend, and a guy who never falls asleep during his criminal trial, Mr. Joe Polizzi.
I try not to.
Yeah.
I was in a couple issues lawsuits that were
a couple of issues
I'm not even gonna get into it, and don't ask me and don't send anything. It wasn't my fault.
That's right, you were this was the classic story when you got called out into the hall and they were like, don't answer the question, just answer the question.
It's I was getting deposed in a They asked me like one question. It was like a yes or no. And I went into this big explanation. And my lawyer takes a timeout, says, judge, I need to, or whatever, the mediator, whatever it was, go out into the hall, pins me up against the wall. Says, what are you doing? Just answer the question. Why are you giving all this? Did I not teach you whatever? And I was so scared. And I didn't even want to speak when I went back in. And I'm
right.
No.
Yes, my entire interpretation of depositions now comes from the show Suits. So,
I've not watched it.
It's got to be the furthest thing away from actual depositions. But you know, they're so dramatic and so you know, and you had sex with your brother, you know.
What is this?
Yeah, it's like.
What kind of a show is this? And what's so funny about that is it's on its like eighth or ninth season, right? It's been around.
Oh, it's been done.
Time.
No, it's been done for years. It's been it ended in 2019, I think, was the last 2018 or 2019 was the last season.
There's
a remake. A reboot. Let's call it of Suits coming soon, which I'm really sad about actually because I love the show. First of all, I am a huge fan of the show. And we've been binging it since end of last year and we're on season 7. So we have a season and a half left to go. And it's just so good. I mean, it's just such mindless, great, entertaining television. It's just wonderful.
You'll have to let me know because I think it was something, and this is just a conversation with my youngest, something happened in 7, year 7 or 8. And he had to stop watching it. It was some event that just was too unbelievable, or maybe that already happened.
No. I think I know what he's referring to. And unfortunately, because of social media and because of things where I'd want to look up something that happened during a particular season, like where I was in the middle of the season. So we're on season 7 right now, and there are 9 seasons. So we still have season 8 and 9. And when I was looking something up, like an actor who was playing a guest role or something like that, you know, you're inevitably going to hit something, right? You're going to hit some social media post or some article that gives you a spoiler. And I happen to know a spoiler that happens in season eight. So I think I know, the event that he's talking about that kind of turned everybody off and why they only went one more season after that.
Makes sense. And better news, I just came back from my golf
trip. News.
And I don't care. I'm not going to watch Suits. I don't watch episodic, like anything with more than like one season. I'm not in. Ted Lasso. Dude,
you got to watch Fallout. Fallout is fantastic. It's so fun.
I don't like, I really like the fact that I like my movies like an hour and 40 minutes. That's why I love the 80s. You go to almost any 80s movie.
It's true.
It's an hour and 37 minutes, man. Like, and then all of a sudden now, I mean, if you want to watch it, you go to the movies today. Like, let's say I want to go and watch the new Mission Impossible. You're investing $245, and then with previews, you're looking at over $3. I almost have to go back and get multiple bags of popcorn because you're there so long. You're like eating lunch and dinner. It's too long. I can't take I can't take seasons with episodes. There's only a couple that I've ever done, and that's Ted Lasso and Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is a cartoon. Not the one on Netflix, the cartoon.
I understand which one you're talking about. I know the show. So, yes.
You know how good it is.
No, speaking it's just ridiculous.
Speaking of nothing that related to that, I went on my annual golf trip last week.
I heard this.
144 holes in 4 days. We had great weather in South Carolina. It was awesome. And still, you weren't there again. Every year, there's an open invitation.
I never will be. Yes, right.
Every year, open invitation. Robert Rose, you want to come play some golf? And you're like, a golf is the stupidest thing ever created.
It's pretty stupid. Yeah. It's pretty stupid.
It is stupid.
The drinking part I like. The riding around in carts. The walk in the park I like. But the thing about golf is the whole goal of golf is to play the least amount of golf.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That's why when we go with...
It's a weird sport.
The best people are always very refreshed. Because they've only swung the club a couple of times. And worst ones are the ones that are really, really
very tired
out there. Yeah. Those are the ones that also drink a lot more because, they're struggling.
Well, they have to walk, right? They have to walk to the place, because they hit it into the forest or whatever. And then they have to
It always goes into the forest. it keeps going into the forest or the desert.
The deep thicket or the shrubberies.
Or the ocean.
Yes. That's correct.
It's an element. Some element that it runs into. I have a couple things before we get to the news. I have a couple things to mention. We did extend registration for a Content Entrepreneur Expo because we're the Tom 100s are trickling in. So if you want to be a guest on This Old Marketing, it's done on Monday. I'm cutting it off. We're going to take whoever we have by Monday, the 21st. What is that? The 21st. So if you want to go ahead and be a guest and come to Content Entrepreneur Expo, which is May 5th.
The chance to become a guest. Not everybody.
The chance to become a guest.
Very clear about that.
It's not like if you're going to. That would be funny, though, to see. I don't think it would help either way. But go to cex.events. Use TOM100 as your discount code. That puts you into the bucket where we will pull the name to see who's going to be our guest for the opening reception on a special episode of This Old Marketing. So I want to make sure that everyone knows that. I don't want to forget. And I'm very excited about your presentation.
I'm super excited about my presentation, too. I have to be honest. I wasn't. I was scared to death of it.
I'm being honest. Joe asked you to do a speech. You're not at all into it.
I'm just being honest. I was scared to death of it because I was like, I don't even know. I mean, it's such a broad, marketing. How do you do marketing, right? So, but I found it. I found the story. I found the angle.
Awesome.
I'm calling it the 45-minute MBA. It's for those who are content entrepreneurs and content businesses. This is going to be what you need to know about marketing, and it's as a strategy for your business. Because as you're going to talk about in your keynote, the amazing thing is that content creators often forget that they're actually running a business. Their job is not to be a content creator. Their job is to be the CEO of a media company, and content creation is the product, right? So you got to market that product.
Well, that's where, I mean, that's why I got back into all this stuff and why my wife keeps yelling at me for starting all this stuff, because we found all these content creators out there that didn't know how to run a business.
That's right.
It's like you are a business first, and you just happen to, and you know, we've talked about this a lot. We don't have to go into it, but that's the whole idea of why we created the show. It's like, you are an entrepreneur. There's a distinction between a content creator and a content entrepreneur. And those that really understand are the ones that are going to be financially independent and live their dreams and do all that other wacky stuff.
Live their dreams.
Live your dreams. Well, like we're doing.
Yeah. Speaking of dreams, let's get to our dreamy show. It is a dreamy show. It's a dreamy show, I think.
I like it.
Yeah. So we've got a great show. We're going to talk a little bit about Google and how they have removed access to news, something that's going woefully underreported as far as I can tell. They've actually removed access to news for some people in California. I'm not one of them, but so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about how John Deere, the tractor company, has now decided to hire a CTO, a chief tractor officer, from so its good. Ranks of audiences to become sort of a big media influencer or content influencer. We'll mention about how venture companies, so content creation seems to be back. It's brought sexy back. So venture companies are on the rebound with investing in content creator companies. And then we'll sort of get to TikTok creators and how they sent an open letter to Joe Biden saying basically, hey, don't take our liberty away or something.
They didn't do. They didn't say, hey, we don't, but don't ban our stuff. Yeah. They didn't do
that's
that.
That's kind of what it is, though.
What you think of Gen Z?
No, God, no. Don't turn Gen Z on me. That's I don't need any of that. I don't need any of that. But anyway,
I love you, but there's nobody in Gen Z that knows you. You don't know anybody who's Gen Z.
That is patently untrue.
You know somebody who's Gen Z.
Of course. No, many.
You're friends with anybody who's Gen Z?
Am I close friends with anybody in Gen Z? No, I don't think so. I mean, I have. Close,
hanging out on a beach there. You
I mean, I have nieces and people. I have nieces and sort of.
Okay. So you have family.
Family, and then I have. There are colleagues. Oh, how about that? Colleagues that are Gen Z. Many of my clients have young.
That would
professionals. One of my biggest clients is a Gen Z person. So
do they respect you because you're an elder statesman?
They do not. No, they do not. They absolutely do not.
Do you get out and you say, hey, I was alive before the internet?
Yeah.
Like, do you get
let me tell you something about showbiz, kid. You know, I've told you that story before, haven't I?
No, you should tell everybody that. It's a good story.
Okay, it's a very quick story.
Oh my gosh. We can do whatever we want.
That's true.
Very quick story.
So I was here in Hollywood, and I was the musical director of a theater show that played in Vegas and Reno, mostly all the gambling towns. And sometimes here in Los Angeles as well, but we would do these big events and we were sort of the entertainment. And so we were doing this big show in Las Vegas and, we were backstage, of this big casino. I think it was the Bellagio. And we were backstage and the Bellagio theaters, you know, just amazing. I mean, it's all professional, like super, super high level stuff. And we're backstage and we're getting ready and we're putting all of our equipment together. And we did our rehearsal and I walked backstage and there's a guy sitting in a giant bear costume, like a giant, big, like fuzzy bear costume, you know, with the giant head and the head is off and sitting next to him. And he's got his arm resting on the bear next to him and he's smoking a cigarette and he looks at me and I said, how you doing, man? And he looks up at me and he goes, welcome to showbiz, kid. And I'll never forget that for the rest of my life, that was my welcome to big time showbiz, was this guy in a bear, this old man in a bear smoking a cigarette. Welcome to showbiz,
visual,
kid.
The visual is perfect.
It's so good. It's so good. Thing.
I wish. And what we didn't like have phones on us at the time. It's not like,
this is all.
You can't do an Ussie with the bear or anything. That's like right. That. So what are you going to do?
Exactly right. All right. The rest of the show is we got some hits and misses, and I'm going to talk about a hit that I think is actually a miss, and that's about how Dove and they have come out and saying they won't use AI to display real people. Yes. Joe's going to talk a little bit about Caitlin Clark on Saturday Night Live. And then we'll get to our rants and raves, where I will, I'm going to rant a little bit about, that's a commentary more than a rant, about CMO tenure and where it is right now and the articles that continue to emerge about how CMOs and where their tenure is. And Joe's going to talk about a songwriter on Google who's written more than 20,000 songs and may or may not be gaming the system for how people find music, but we'll talk
about
that.
Super interesting. So, yeah, at minimum, I want to talk about it and want to get your take with it, because I'm just fascinated by what this gentleman is able to accomplish.
A dreamy show. Welcome to showbiz, kid. Welcome to showbiz. All right, let's get to our first big story here, and that comes to us courtesy of AP, the Associated Press, of course. And that is the headline that says, faced with possibly paying for news, Google removes links to California news sites for some users. The article opens up by saying Google on Friday began removing California news websites from some people's search results, a test that acted as a threat should the state legislature pass a law requiring the search giant to pay media companies for linking to their content. By the way, an issue we talked about on the show back in 2023 when it actually started to become a thing. Google announced the move in a blog post on Friday, calling it a, quote, short-term test for a small percentage of users to measure the impact on the legislation on our product experience. Yeah, that was written by a PR agency. The company said it would pause new investments on the California news industry. We predicted that as well, including the partnership initiative with news organizations and its product licensing program. By helping people find news stories, we help publishers of all sizes grow their audiences at no cost to them. This bill would end that model, said Jaffer Zaidi, Google's vice president for global news partnerships, in that blog post. And then they goes on to talk about how the legislature is being considered. It's a bill that would require basically not just Google, but Google, Facebook, Microsoft, to start paying a certain percentage of advertising revenue to media companies by being able to have access to link to their content. So classic, you know, we saw this in Australia. We saw this in Canada. It's currently happening in Canada still, I think, with Facebook. What, any major takes on this?
Well, the ship has sailed on news companies having any kind of power when it comes to big tech, especially Google. Yeah. I mean, if you were going to make this kind of move, you should have done it in 2006. And it has been done. It's not like we haven't tried this before, but Google has way too much power. And I don't have a problem necessarily with the negotiation tech of Google, but because they can do whatever they want. But I think it was idiotic for them to bring more attention to the power that they have, because if they keep doing these kinds of moves, at some point, I don't know if it's this administration or the next or the one after that, they're going to say Google and YouTube, Alphabet, and their ilk have too much power, and they're going to have to be broken up. And not that I think they should, maybe, I don't know. But this is bringing attention to it by doing these kinds of tests, or to see what the legislation, if it goes into action, is going to make, it was dumb. They should do these things not in public. They should do them, have some good conversations. They honestly, probably out of the goodness of their hearts, like a donation, because we believe in news in America, they should just pay news companies a blanket fee in the United States and have it prorated and do that. And just do it every year and have it be the news tax, because Google is so big now and they have so much power. And actually do the news tax to avoid any more government scrutiny, because if they do this kind of stuff again, they're doing it in California.
Yeah.
Maybe they're like, oh, it's California. If they start doing it, let's say they do it in Texas and they do it in Florida, you're going to start having some problems, and somebody on the right's going to say, oh, not, we don't believe in breaking up companies, but this company needs to be broken up.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going to happen. And I think even though they can make this move and you don't think it's a big deal, it's drawing the wrong attention, and Google shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that you mentioned Texas and Florida here, because the irony here is that in both, I believe, in Texas and Florida, there are lawsuits from the state governments there against Facebook, more the social media side of things, about how you can't eliminate anything, right? You can't, like, they're saying you're not allowed basically to eliminate any content that's put on your platform. Yep. It has to all be, you know, free speech. You're not allowed to do so. There's a really interesting sort of extreme sides of both of these arguments that basically talk about what editing means versus censorship means and all of that. But to your point, to me, this is a comms problem, not a, you know, it's like, why even post a blog about this if I'm Google? Like, why even communicate this? Unless you're trying to, like, signal a threat, right? It you know, you're picking a fight where you don't need to pick a fight. Either the legislation is going to pass, and there's, you know, of course, behind the scenes lobbying happening and all kinds of lunches being had and PowerPoint decks being demonstrated and all the sorts of things are happening way in the background. I'm just not sure what Google gains here by putting out this publicly and saying, hey, we're taking away news from people while we figure all this out. It's like, this does nothing other than to inflame the topic. So as a comm strategy, I just don't understand it.
It violates the Coke Pepsi rule. Do you know what the Coke Pepsi rule is?
I do. Yeah. I do. But tell people, because
if you're Coca-Cola is the number one soft drink manufacturer from that standpoint. Coke's the biggest.
Yep.
Coke cannot slam on Pepsi or anyone else. You cannot negatively portray anyone else because it's like Goliath slamming on David. You cannot do that publicly. It is a big no-no from a PR standpoint. Pepsi can slam on Coke all day long.
Of course.
Because they're the underdog. So you can't. And at one time,
it's like with political candidates, you never say your opponent's name, right?
Can't punch down. Can't punch down. You just can't do it. And that's
basically acknowledge them, right? By acknowledging them, they are saying that there's a legitimate argument to be had, right? And so that's, you know, yeah.
It's just so silly because the amount of money that they're talking about in this is literally pennies.
I know.
For Alphabet. And the only thing that could go wrong in this whole thing is government getting involved and saying there's something that they got to break it up. That's the only thing. Everything else is just nothing for them. So why are they doing? They could just come across and say, we are Alphabet, and we are a wonderful company, and we believe in the news.
Yeah.
And here's what we're going to do. They could be, is magnanimous the right word? I don't know if that is. But something like that.
Smart. How about smart? I mean, you know, smart from a comms and marketing perspective, you know, I mean, and look, and it's not from the other side of the equation as well. I mean, you know, we've talked at great length about the Canadian situation and how short-sighted this was of the media companies to sort of, you know, to in terms of filing these lawsuits and everything they were doing, which, you know, it both sides, you know, it's a little Shakespearean, right? You know, a pox on both their houses. Because this is, you know, for the media company side, especially with how AI is starting to emerge here, this is a little bit like, you know, the horse has not only left the barn, but it's been replaced by a car. So it's like, I'm not sure what you're actually trying to do here to get that horse back in the barn. Because even if you can get it back in the barn, there's a car waiting to drive out. So, yeah.
The fix is actually a universal ad program that Google spends with these media companies. That it's not, it shouldn't be just a donation, or it's just like I called it whatever, the Google tax or the media tax. It shouldn't be that way. It should actually be that a long-term, like in California specifically, we're going to do a deal with the news media, and Google is going to spend dollars of advertising with them. So that would be, I think, a perfect way to do it.
I don't know how many times on this show we have talked about the opportunity in news and especially local news for a big brand to step up and do a content marketing play with a sponsorship idea, right? Yeah. You know, they name stadiums. They might as well, you know, help sponsor local journalism.
That's right.
Google has every incentive to do that.
Reason to do it. Yep.
Right. And they could totally frame it that way, right? That this is completely about, we're setting up a foundation called the Journalism Foundation, and we're going to pay news people, and we're going to make sure that quality journalism lives and breathes in the United States. And we're here for that. Right. And it's, I don't understand why they don't do it.
Now would be the right time, actually, with all the ChatGPT search stuff going on. Wouldn't it be perfect? They would just all align together.
And the election and the whole, I mean everything, right? I mean, yeah. Anyway.
What is wrong with them?
Yeah.
Like, do they not listen to us?
They don't. They don't listen to us.
What's wrong? What is hey, wrong?
You know who does listen to us?
No.
The people who pay our bills.
Do they?
See what I did there? Yes. Yeah, yes. I did that. Yes.
They do.
Yeah. Let's pay some bills.
Good. Okay.
So much like the age-old question to skinny jean or not to skinny jean, marketing strategies can come and go and come back again. Who can keep up? Luckily, there's HubSpot's 2024 State of Marketing Report, The Skinny, if you will, an all-in-one guide for what's happening this year and how marketers can best approach it all. The report covers everything from increasing awareness and engagement to ensuring privacy, boosting efficiency, and, of course, growth. Don't get caught behind the trends. Visit HubSpot.com/stateofmarketing to get your free copy of the report. You looking to hustle into a new podcast? Well, I recommend Hustle and Flowchart. The Hustle and Flowchart podcast is all about how to build a business so it gives you the freedom and fuel for your life. Join host Joe Fier as he discusses systems, mindset tweaks, reframes, and strategies for entrepreneurs, and really anyone, to enjoy the process of being in business and having fun. This isn't for the entrepreneur looking to build a billion-dollar business. Rather, someone who is looking to build systems to help you make more money than you need just by working part-time. Get the Hustle and Flowchart podcast wherever you follow your favorite pods. You want some big news? Well, the amazing team at Divi HQ have joined forces with Litho. Now, why is that important? Well, Divi has been building amazing collaboration and calendaring software for marketing teams for 13 years. And Litho, well, they've been doing the same with tools for creative and design teams. Now, just like chocolate and peanut butter, they've come together to help all marketers and content producers plan, create, and perform better together. I'm excited to share that This Old Marketing listeners get a 20% discount for life on any Divi HQ or Litho product. And that's not all. Check this out. The first 10 companies that sign up with this campaign will get a free, that's right, free one-hour content workshop with me. Yeah, that's how much we're into this. So don't wait. Visit lythoforlife.com. That's L-Y-T-H-O, lythoforlife.com to learn more. Are you looking to create a show? You know, kind of like the one you're watching or listening to right now? How meta. Well, Joe and I love StreamYard. And with StreamYard, you can multi-stream to your social media platforms, host a weekly show with special guests, create webinars, record podcasts with local recordings, create videos, and so much more. Joe and I have been using StreamYard for This Old Marketing's YouTube channel, as well as live streaming to LinkedIn. We never knew how easy this could be. Just go to StreamYard.com/thetilt and receive a lifetime discount.
That's now nice.
Now it's time for a nap. Because we had so many ads. No, it's good. We have such great partners.
We have great partners, great sponsors. Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. And go sign up for that. Go sign up for that Divi thing. I want to do a workshop. I want to try at least one. To see how it works out. So you got to go sign up.
Go do it. And the link's in the show notes for all this stuff, by the way. So it works out fairly well.
There you go. What do we got? All right. Getting to the best of the rest, of the news here. So to start us off here, John Deere, which has been in the news in not a good way over the past few months over the right to repair stuff, has announced some interesting things, especially this idea of paying up to almost $200,000 a year for a chief tractor officer. They're going to help launch their TikTok channel just in time for it to be banned, of course. And basically, it's the article from entrepreneur.com opens up by saying, John Deere is looking for a different kind of CTO, a chief tractor officer. The winner of the competition that they're holding will help launch the agriculture equipment company's new TikTok channel. And entries are going to be accepted until April 29th, with the finalists selected after May 17th. They're on the hunt. And the brand Tuesday announced that it's going to do this over the course of the next 2 weeks. to find their chief tractor officer who would create social media content to reach younger consumers. And the winning applicant will receive up to $192,300. That's an oddly specific number, to traverse the country over the next several months, showcasing the way John Deere products are used by workers from Yellowstone National Park to Chicago's Wrigley Field and beyond. Sounds like they have a campaign already planned, but what do you think about this? By the way, they've tapped NFL quarterback Brock Purdy, who will presumably be a bit busy this fall to take the job himself, to star in a clip which he attempts to set out on a road trip in an industrial tractor. So they're kicking it off with somebody like Brock Purdy to sort of say, this is what it could look like if they have an influencer to put in there.
Why no Dak Prescott? Why Brock Purdy? Yeah, this is not good. I don't like the Cowboys apparently.
Why not somebody from Kansas or Nebraska or somewhere in the Midwest where tractors are like a thing? Like why not
Iowa?
Patrick Mahomes,
Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark.
Awesome. That would be
that. Caitlin, that's that would, a missed that would opportunity.
Have been too, that would have been too perfect.
That's a missed opportunity.
So I think this is getting a lot of publicity. Thank you to Carmen Hill for sending.
Yes. Thank you, Carmen.
By the way, I think that it's because of the topic. If you're with a tech company, this doesn't get any notoriety at all. This is getting coverage because of the fact that it is John Deere and its chief tractor officer, which is cute. I think that's great. They'll probably get a ton of
to the marketing department for sure. Yeah.
It's interesting. So you know that we're big fans of Cedar Fair, Cedar Point amusement park. Mm-hmm. They're doing a similar thing looking for creators right now. So you're seeing more and more companies do this. I guess my whole take is this is fine. I'm sure it'll work out great. I'm under the assumption that there's somebody in their company already doing this. And that what I would say, and this is with anybody listening, if you have a marketing department, I think that it's now is a really good time to shine a light on the people in your company that are already doing these types of things and giving them the resources they need to take the next level instead of going on the outside and finding somebody when you don't have to. Now, if this is just a PR play, fine. It's like we said, it's cute. It's great.
I think that's the thing, right? I think you nailed it, which is, somebody in the meeting said, hey, that influencer thing we've been doing with, the tractor thing and having people, making videos, and we want to do social media and show John Deere, to sort of resonate with the younger crowd and all of that. What we should do is we should layer over sort of a meta campaign there and hire a chief tractor officer and make a thing out of it so that it gets media coverage. And then that'll help kickstart our TikTok channel. So, and somebody went, yes, that's the right idea. So ultimately I would think, and this is the idea, is that this person does become an employee, hopefully. And so they sort of take on the role of that. We're seeing this more and more, not only in B2B, but in B2C as well, where we're seeing much more focus on the influencer and content. I mean, it's going to feed right into our next story here, but if feeding into this idea of internal content creators who are acting as either subject matter experts or influencers to help drive awareness and sort of pierce the noise through social media on platforms like TikTok to get our it is really the heart of the new social media strategy.
The individual. Even with it's when I did my presentation at Marketing Profs, I talked about this, but I talked about one of the key trends in the influencer and content creation business is instead of sending it out from the company, instead of it's your company X account or Instagram account, this is an individual. This is somebody that you're giving them the resources to be a better, be a better influencer, a better content creator. And I think that that's what you're going to see. And that's why maybe you need to rethink, instead of sending out your email newsletter from whatever company, maybe it comes from an individual in your marketing department or in your engineering division. I think that's the way that we're going, because individuals are getting more attention. And I think as these algorithms continue to take over, as they've already have, it's very difficult for a company to get any kind of traction on social media as a company.
That's right.
So you have to rethink and say, you know what? Our LinkedIn page as a company is not going to do anything. Like, you might just want to forget it and not publish anymore off of your LinkedIn and say, okay, who are the individuals? Where are they? Who are the ones that already have an audience? Let's just give them more resources to be a better person, to be a better influencer.
It's, you know, it was funny. I watched one of the heads of marketing at McDonald's give a talk recently where they talked about how some of the national campaigns that the national branding, their campaigns that they're doing now are being born out of the organic influencer stuff that's happening, you know, on one of the channels. It might be X, it might be Instagram, it might be TikTok. And they look at that and they see what starts to resonate. And then they sort of double down on that. And instead, you know, the old way of doing that was doubling down and doing a, you know, promoting that post, right? Promoting that post or promoting that theme of you know, whatever sort of took off and went viral. Mm-hmm. And now it seems that, you know, it's almost like in the old days you had the network media buy, which was to buy big swaths of, you know, rented land across media channels to put your ads, to put your content on. And then it got to the hyper local media buy, which was to segment by channel, by region, by DMA, and put in all your media buys and sort of reach hyper local audiences, targeted audiences in that way. And now it's almost this micro level media buy where now if I'm a B2B company, I go out to 17 or 20 influencers and I spend a few hundred or a few thousand dollars and I have them all do posts from them. And that becomes, and then you sort of apply that same level of influencer buy to an internal employee, which becomes sort of the new shared media, right? The new shared mm-hmm. media strategy, which is getting our employees and building up our employees as individuals who represent our brand. It's a fascinating trend for sure.
It really is. It's an interesting way to think about the future of the marketing department in a business and
yeah.
how different it's going to look where you have a bunch of content creators.
And I'll tell you what, there's one other weird thing, and we didn't report on it. This was almost my rant this week, but there's another weird trend that's starting to come up among agencies here that I've seen, which is you have all these agencies, and most of them are in either Eastern Europe or South America. Brazil is a big source of this, that are putting out campaigns for brands. Like they'll make a video for Burger King, or they'll make a video for some other big brand it looks like a marketing campaign, right? And it ends up going a little viral because all these people share it. And their hope is that it gets the attention of the national brand and they get hired to actually execute against it. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of this fan fiction, if you will, or fan ads. And it's a really interesting trend that I've seen, which is if you're a brand, you kind of don't want people doing that at all, right? Because it can go sideways for you quickly. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is helping in some ways.
Yeah. It's almost like you have to, you know, how many CMOs have we talked to about, we need to control the brand.
Yeah.
We need to, you know, you can't. You don't control a brand. Brand is not controllable. I'm almost like if you just give up, you just give the assets away and let your super fans do whatever. I know it can backfire.
Yeah.
There might be more upside than not by doing
might
that.
Might be. All right. Well, speaking of upside, venture companies are now rebounding on content creator startups. This story coming to us courtesy of The Information. Which I just continue to really like, by the way.
They do a good job.
They do a really nice job. And the headline here is, and sorry, you're going to need an account to actually read most of this article. We don't get paid for this. It's a good enough to warrant a subscription, put it that way. What to make of Venture's new appetite for creator startups? And you can start to see from the charts that are visible and until you have to get behind the subscription wall anyway, that it's starting to bounce back. It's been steadily going down since 2021 by quarter, but it is now starting to bounce back up again. And so the article opens up by saying, hey, we're kind of back, sort of. Funding for U.S. creator economy startups increased for the first time in 2 years, bucking a continued slump in overall funding for American startups. Investments in U.S. startups more than doubled in the first 3 months of the year to nearly $341 million year over year, according to the information's creator economy database. Compare that to last year's dismal results when funding dropped at least 46% each quarter. Founders shouldn't get too excited about the rebound. VCs aren't whipping out their checkbooks like they were in 21, when U.S. creator economy startups raised an average of $1.5 billion per quarter. Many have been burned by bets that haven't panned out. Guess what? That's the media company, folks. And so other startups are still struggling to get to profitability and seeking buyers. That's the long-term vision that you have to have, according to a guy named Joe Polizzi. So what do you think? What do you think about all this? I mean, I think this is part and parcel with what we were just talking about, but what do you think?
I'm guessing that the tick up is a belief that ultimately there is a solid business model for a scalable media business. And let's be honest, the media business model for the most part is terrible.
That's right.
It is really horrible. But what isn't
at scale? It is at scale.
At scale. I mean, I'll talk about it all day long. I think that small creators that are not looking to scale, that want to build $1, $2, $3 million businesses, they're out there all over the place. It's wonderful.
Right.
Go for it. But if you want to build a $20, $30, $40, $50 million media company, it is incredibly difficult to scale and to make the dollars make sense in any way. I'm concerned that the money going into this is the belief that the media business model is a good model. It's not. So, but where I do believe, which you mentioned already on the show, but supporting local news businesses, I believe if you had this idea where you're going to invest money in these creator businesses to not be in the media business, but to say be a marketing arm for a large company, now that gets me excited. Now that I totally like, and you will find a lot of dollars open up for that kind of model. We're just not there yet. We will be. I think that in, I don't know how long it's going to take, Robert. We've been talking about it forever. 2 years, 3 years, you're going to see this thing go up and VCs are going to move it. And ultimately the buyer will be P&G. The buyer will be Unilever. The buyer will be John Deere.
Yeah. Right? Acquiring the content creator is
It's not
right.
there yet. We're in this weird little middle period where we're like engaged.
Well, I think
we're still not sure.
Yeah. I think the bigger brands are starting to come around to this, right? I mean, and this is totally anecdotal. I'm seeing more and more both B2B and B2C brands have people called content creators. Like they're literally setting up little entrepreneurial people to represent the brand, and their job is to be that, you know, it's sort of the new social media manager, right? Is this sort of influencer, subject matter expert, somebody who they, you know, a content that was either acquired as part of an acquisition of their blog and all their content and their audience, or is someone who is relatively, you know, deep in a particular area and they just want to have them be the brand ambassador kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm in full disclosure. I'm right in the middle of this happening, and I believe it's going to be successful because Lulu buys the Tilt, because ultimately they wanted to launch an imprint for content creators, a book publishing imprint. And they're like, do we do that under Lulu or do we do that under a community that already exists? They
said
the Tilt already exists for this group of content creators for nonfiction books. That's exactly what we want to do. These creators need help. We'll create Tilt Publishing. They go and buy the Tilt. And 9 months later, we have Tilt Publishing.
Yep.
So that's the kind of thing that can happen, because you basically say, oh, I don't have to spend 3 to 5 years to build the community.
Right.
And there's no reason you might not actually build a community. You might try to. It's like, oh, it didn't work out. I didn't have the right content niche. I didn't have the right content. I didn't have the right organizational structure. Sometimes it doesn't work. It's like, go buy one of these that's already working and do your thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right. Good stuff. Let's move very quickly through the last story that we'll tell before we get to our hits and misses, which is about TikTok. And this comes to us courtesy of the Publish Press. www.divhq.com. And it's one of their newsletters. And one of the articles in the newsletter is that TikTok creators have signed an open letter to President Biden. The article says, as the Senate considers a bill, they're not really considering it, but let's just give that. as the Senate considers a bill that would force TikTok parent ByteDance to sell the app or risk being banned in the U.S., creators have come together in opposition of the potential ban in an open letter titled Dear President Biden, Dear Joe Biden. The details, our advocacy for TikTok is not a threat, but a declaration of our commitment to protecting a platform that is integral to our livelihoods and sources of joy. The letter reads, we will continue to mobilize and utilize our platforms to defend TikTok, even though it comes at the opportunity cost of collaborating on other important initiatives like voter turnout. Oh, ooh, threat. Ooh, big threat there. Okay. Anyway, lifestyle creator Nadia Okamoto is spearheading the effort, recruiting 19 other creators, including motherhood vlogger Tiffany Remington and skincare creator Adalita Avdic. I always forget how to pronounce the with the C with the umlaut. Anyway, it's a collective following of over 16 million to join her. Okamoto has rallied around a political issues before fighting the tampon tax with August with her period care brand last year. And then the Senate will vote in the bill in the coming months. No, they won't. Though experts anticipate legal challenges to the legislation. Yes, they will. Anyway, so what do you think about all this? You're going to kind of hear my take in the whole.
I think we definitely get it. But you should expand on it. I think that TikTok originally, when this first started, TikTok had that SMS text message campaign that they sent to their creators and their users and said, please call your local, which backfired, which seemed very negative. But the battle that they're fighting to get their large creators on board with this is brilliant. I mean, because it's like, hey, our livelihood, this is really important, whatever. I think you're right. Probably nothing will happen, but I like that whole thing. So I think that they're going in the right direction. Does this really ultimately mean anything? Probably not. The concern, this is sort of off the topic, but it's interesting. When I talk to, I'm not on TikTok, as you know, but I have been talking to people who are TikTok about this issue, and they always bring up the idea about privacy. It's like privacy, whatever. It's just privacy. And to me, and so that's, I think that's going to help TikTok ultimately, because privacy has become a non-issue. Most people don't care about it anymore. And privacy is not the key issue that we should be thinking about from a Chinese company having such influence. It's sentiment. It's flow of information. But nobody's talking about that. You talk to a regular user, they say privacy is the issue. And Chinese having the data. That's not the issue. It's flow of information where they can control what's being seen. So that's what I mean. I'm just boggled that people don't get that issue, that know that that's a thing. Because then everybody, like even my youngest, he's like, this is stupid. Like, who cares? Like, whatever. And I'm like, we would never allow this if all of our newspapers in the United States were owned by the Chinese government. We'd never allow that. But the largest media company on the planet is owned by a Chinese company. I don't know.
So let's be clear. It's not owned by a Chinese company. It has partial investment from a Chinese company. By the way, 7,000 Americans also own TikTok. So, they're.
Yes, what you said is technically correct.
Okay, Boomer.
Is it?
So here we go. But let's be clear. It's influenced by the Chinese government. There's no doubt that it's influenced by the Chinese government. And there's already other reports coming out saying from former TikTok employees saying, well, it actually does get influenced pretty heavily. And so there's a lot to unpack there, and we're certainly not going to do it right now. But my thing with this is this just sounds, it sounds like whining to me. I mean, there is a way to do this that doesn't sound like you're trying to, this is literally the definition of screaming into the void, of an open letter to Biden. That's not serious. That's not a serious thing. If they want to get really organized about this, they should get organized about it. They should get really organized and talk about the business implications and all those kinds of things. But basically saying it's going to take my hair care thing away is not my joy away. This is, you know, this is, to your point, a national security issue. And so if you're going to make an argument, it better be a serious one. And I just don't find this to be a, you know, there's that great line. You didn't watch Succession, did you?
No, I did not. I've watched an episode.
But the CEO, the dad and the family, basically there's this, it's a very highly quotable line. He looks at his family, who are all kids, and they're all going to start running the, you know, it's like, which one's going to run the company? And he looks at him and he goes, "None of you are serious people." And it's, you know, it's that kind of thing. Right. So I think this is a non-news item. Let me put it that way.
Well, I mean, you just believe nothing's going to happen.
Like, I don't. That's exactly what I think is going to happen. I think this is a lot of drama over something that's not going to happen. That's exactly what I think. That's right.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm more concerned. I still am concerned about this, and I voiced it for the last 3 years that I am concerned. But I'm more concerned over, in a good way, what I can't believe I'm going to say this, what Florida did with their social media ban. It's not 100% the right answer.
But yeah,
I want to see social media out of hands of kids.
Yeah.
As soon as possible, and whatever we need to do to make that happen, even though there'll be ways around it, and there always are, whatever we can do for that. That is more important, but
100%. All right, let's get to our hits and misses, where Joe and I pick a hit or a miss from the week of marketing. Somebody who had a big hit and really knocked it out of the park, or somebody who had a big miss, big hashtag fail. Do you want to go first, or you want me to go first?
Mine's real quick.
Mine is too.
I can't believe, after not knowing who Caitlin Clark is, how I'm following her.
You're a super fan.
I've become a super fan of Caitlin Clark, who got drafted number one for the Indiana Fever.
Yeah, did you see that payday?
Yes.
And if you can call it that.
Understand, what is it, $73,000 a year?
It's an escalating thing. It's a 4-year deal for $330,000, I think, or something like that.
Okay. Let's talk about this for a second. I think it's important.
Okay.
There are people that are comparing the number one Wemby, the number one pick for San Antonio, that got $58 million or whatever he got, versus Caitlin's small. Now, here's the thing. And everybody. I don't want to exaggerate. Many people are out there complaining.
Many people are saying that
it's not fair. It probably isn't fair. But the point is, the WNBA loses money every year and is subsidized by the NBA. Here's the solution. Everybody who wants Caitlin Clark to get more money, go buy season tickets. Go to the games like I'm going to go to this year.
Yeah,
go and support women's basketball. And if you do that, everyone will get more money. It is not a thing where Caitlin should get more money because this is the business of it. And the reason why Wemby's getting $58 million is because the NBA is making a ton of money, because they are getting a ton of money from a lot of different organizations and people.
Yeah.
So that's 100%. What I would say, please. But anyways,
I 100% agree with you. Asterisk there. I'll say we should also mention that Caitlin Clark is in negotiations right now with Nike to have a signature shoe, and for certainly what will be an eight-figure sponsorship deal.
She's going to make gobs and gobs of money through sponsorship, and she absolutely deserves it. But my correlation, she was on a Saturday Night Live. She had a great little news. It's a 3-minute news segment. I'll put it in the show notes. Super funny. She's getting better in front of the camera. She will get better. But what I think is important, I think that this is a Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan type moment.
Totally.
I mean, if you remember, before Tiger Woods came into golf, there were no real stars. It was really struggling to gain an audience. You had your pure fans, but it didn't widen. Tiger Woods widened that reach, and golf is now as popular as it ever was because I believe Tiger Woods' influence. I believe Caitlin Clark is going to do the same thing for women's basketball, but it goes back to what we were just saying. Focus on your stars. Find your stars and go out there and put them in situations where it can grow the entire industry, grow your market, whatever. Sell more products for you. Figure out your individuals, even at risk that you might say that that person might leave someday. Like, really put in. I love what Caitlin is doing and getting out there and all the spots. And her, the more that she gets airtime, the better it's going to be for women's basketball and women's sports. And I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. So focus on the stars and your dreams will come true.
Right. Yes. Right. It's you, this is a once in a generation star.
Yeah. I know.
And, and let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Like my son would say, get a dub.
Yeah.
Dub. I'm like, dub. Yeah. Dub for like W, like for winning.
Yeah.
I'm like, I get it. Dub.
Get the dub.
Let's go, man. What's yours?
All right. I got to quit. So I think this is a long-term miss that is couched in a short-term hit. So this week, last week, Dove, with its campaign for Real Beauty, which has been an amazing campaign that they've been running since, I think, 2004. So 20 years of the Dove campaign for Real Beauty. And basically, they came out with a press release that said they're not going to use AI to portray real people in any of their ad campaigns. It was quickly followed up with an advertisement that did what? It featured real people being generated by AI. Oh, dear. In fairness, the campaign was about that they were trying to introduce this new prompt. It was a very, very smart, very clever campaign where the video basically shows that images of what they call real beauty are not being portrayed very well by generative AI, ChatGPT and Gemini, and ad nauseum there. And so the video, the ad itself, was basically saying, hey, we basically wanted to train AI to be better, so we created this prompt. And the prompt is, show me what the most beautiful woman in the world looks like as related to the Dove campaign for Real Beauty campaign. And so if you put that then they show what it looks like, and it's all these very diverse, you know, women, all shapes, sizes, colors, et cetera, very diverse, you know, sort of set of women. So I went, oh, that's nice. I'm going to go try it. And so I went and tried it, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. I mean, it definitely shows me, I'll put it this way. It's not, if you put in what's the most beautiful woman in the world into ChatGPT, you're very likely going to get a very long haired, white, very white woman. And you won't get that. And I'll let you all try it on your own. Try it on your own. I did it 17 times and got basically the same image 17 times. So it's not celebrating the diversity.
What were you using?
I used ChatGPT, and then I used Gemini.
DALL-E 3.
DALL-E 3. Well, it's just chat. It's whatever ChatGPT is. It's a paid version, so I guess it's the most latest version of DALL-E.
That's where you get the good one. Yeah.
So I'm just, to me, this is one of those things where you either come out and put a stake in the ground and you say, this is what we're not going to do. I'm not sure why they would do that necessarily. Because there's no upside to this. There's only downside from my perspective, on a comms perspective, from a brand perspective, other than the short-term sugar high that you're going to get from everybody going, ooh, Dove campaign for Real Beauty. They're not going to use AI. Basically, they're throwing AI under the bus here and saying that AI will never be good at generating, what diverse real beauty looks like. And so that works and of course I understand, look, I'm fully understand that they have no control over this, right? Just putting in as related to the Dove campaign for Real Beauty into the prompt is not going to teach generative AI anything. Maybe over time, if enough people start to do it and start thumbs upping the images or whatever, it might start to teach it, but it's not working now. And that was my first inclination, was to go, yeah, I want to go try this and see what that is about. So without really doing the thing, they didn't really do the thing. And so they're leaving it up to ChatGPT, which is the quintessential sort of definition of relying on rented land to provide your value. and they don't have any control over it. And so when it doesn't work, it's not ChatGPT that's going to get the blame. It's going to be Dove. And so there may be a backlash here. There may not be, but to me, it's a long-term miss with a short-term hit.
Yeah. I think that they're bound to look bad, historically speaking, it's hard for any company that is taking a stance on AI right now. Just stop.
Right.
That's my point. Either way, don't take a stance. We just don't know. In one week, it'll be different. Yeah, you just don't know. And I see what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
And it probably had good intentions, but you're right. Long term, it's not going to, it's probably not going to look favorably on them. So just don't.
All right. Really quickly here. Now we get to rants and raves, where Joe and I go off on a little bit of a rant or a little bit of a rave over something that makes us feel like falling asleep during our criminal trial, or something that keeps us awake at night.
Did he really fall asleep?
Twice, 2 days in a row, he fell asleep. Yeah, yeah. Don Snorleone, that was my favorite. That was on social media. Don Snorleone, that was great. Well,
I mean, he needs naps.
Yeah, he needs naps. I mean, that's a rough schedule. I mean, that's a rough schedule for anybody.
So they both need naps. Joe and Donald should be taking vigorous naps,
especially if you're going to be facing multiple criminal charges as you try and run for president.
Good rest.
You need a nap. All right. Do you want to go first or shall I go first?
Sure. I'll be happy.
Actually, let me go first because I like yours better.
Okay.
I like yours better.
Let me stop then. Okay. Go.
I like yours better. And mine's very, very quick. Okay, I just want to point people to this article. It comes from Marketing Dive. And it's about the CMO tenure. The statistic is that basically CMO tenure starts to stabilize over the shortness. And I've covered on this show and in many articles sort of the pendulum swing, it seems, of the sort of feel of CMO tenure. You know, should we have a CMO? Is the job too big? Is it, is it only a temporary job? Is it only an 18-month job? Is it a 36-month job? Can you actually get it up? And basically this article is saying that there's new research has been done that basically says that it's gone up a little bit and basically mirroring a little bit of what C-level tenure has, generally speaking. But CMOs are still the smallest or fewest or least tenured of the positions at the C-level. And it says basically, that this is good news, as the research says, because, they point to a few things which could just be, the change fatigue that we've talked about before, the idea of where the economy is right now, that there's just a little bit of a, we don't want to switch horses right now. Yeah. And as I've said before, I think the CMO tenure thing is, I don't know why we continue to sort of so focus on it. It is what it is for many organizations. And it may just be that the best strategy for a marketing organization at that level is to have sort of a musical chairs. And I will tell you this, by far and large, the most common job for CMOs has nothing to do with marketing. The most common job for CMOs today in most businesses, and this is most large businesses, let's put it that way, is a politics job. It is a politician's job. You are there to be the liaison with whatever marketing strategy is getting formulated at four levels below you, and liaison and inform the board or inform your executive team and be out evangelizing that to the general public and speak at conferences and do those things. It is a politician's job for the most part. It is not a roll up your sleeves kind of job for most CMOs. Yep. And hence, that might be the right job. It might not be. I happen to believe that CMOs should really roll up their sleeves and get involved and get into the work. But a lot of them don't and can't. There's certainly, given the politics of any given organization, they just simply can't, which is why you start to see dual level CMOs, a chief digital officer, a chief, cash flow officer, a chief content officer, and all these kinds of things. So what I'd like to suggest is that we don't get so myopically wrapped around the tenure of a CMO, but start to think about the function of marketing and who should lead it as how do we start thinking long-term versus this continual focus on short-termism that seems to be sort of at the heart of that short tenure.
Was listening to the Pivot show when they were talking about Boeing's CEO leaving.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
After just what it was, after just 4 years, I think the Boeing, and they were talking about how short a time that was to enact any change, and especially culture change in an organization. 4 years, short period of time when you think about a large company. So if we're only talking about a couple of years with the CMO, it's very hard to do anything in that time frame.
There's a fascinating interview with Jeff Bezos that came out this week where he said something that I really, really loved. He said, the best senior level executives live in the future. He said, you know, like I'll be walking at a conference or I'm talking with somebody and they go, hey, you know, Jeff, you had a great quarter this year, you know, or excuse me, a great quarter this quarter. And he says, well, thanks. But in his head, he's like, that quarter that we just got through, that was baked in 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He said, good senior executives live so far in the future that they're working on stuff that won't see the light of day and for 3 or 4 years. And so that's the real key here is a great CMO is setting the stage for long-term value that will certainly take more than 36 months to execute.
It's a great point. Great point. I have an interesting article for my rave/commentary, and this was sent into us by our friend Claire McDermott, wonderful researcher and former chief editor of Chief Content Officer Magazine. The article from New York Times Magazine is called "Why Did This Guy Put a Song About Me on Spotify?" This is a long article, folks. But I think that if you have the time, it is super interesting about this kind of model. And you and I can have a discussion in a bit whether or not this will actually work. But this guy, his name is Matt Farley. He's been creating songs about everything that you can imagine and publishing them on Spotify since 2008. And he's got many different, he's got one label, brand name, if you will, content brand, if you will, just potty humor. And that's all he'll do is create songs about that. He has songs about authors and like what he likes about an author. And he just about even obscure, the more obscure, the better, because somebody might end up searching for this. And so thousands and thousands of songs. And in the first, I don't know the numbers and you can read the article. He's written over 24,000 songs, I've written over 24,000 songs and I wrote 50 songs just yesterday, basically search engine optimizing the heck out of these things. So they're found when somebody is searching for something. So it's now making, I think it's over $200,000 a year just from Spotify on putting these songs out and having a very interesting. I just think that, I guess my question to you is, first of all, good for Matt. This is amazing. He's a musician. He's got his own band and does his own things, but this is how he makes money now. It's just sort of gamifying the system. Do you think in the age of ChatGPT and AI and search changing around that this is a model that people can look at and do anything with? Or is this just a point in time where somebody took advantage of an algorithm?
Well, I think he's benefiting now from the long tail, right? I mean, he's benefiting now from the fact that, you know, he's got a catalog out there of 20,000 songs that are continuing to get views. And so as I read the article, what I was struck by was he's had one or two go a little bit viral and get a lot of views and generate a lot of revenue, but most of them are pennies that he's receiving, right? He's receiving. And so it's just the fact that he's got so much stuff generating, you know, so little that it sort of all aggregates up.
Just an example so people know. So one of his most popular popular songs.
I know the one you're going to go to,
Poop in My Fingernails.
Yeah.
By the Toilet Bowl Cleaners. That's the name of his band.
Cute.
Currently has over 4.4 million streams on Spotify alone.
That's right. Which, by the way, is not a lot of money. That sounds like a lot, but that 4.4 million streams.
But here you go. But here's where it gets. The collection of them for the Toilet Bowl Cleaners on Spotify alone has brought in 469,000. Oh, no. On various all platforms, 469,000 for the collection by the Toilet Bowl Cleaners.
Right.
Now that's, I think, his most popular genre, if you will.
What it doesn't say is that 469,000... over how long, right? So it's multiple years.
11 years.
Yeah, 11 years, right? Yes. So do that math really quickly, or then it quickly stops.
That's why I'm saying the whole collection gets $200,000.
Totally. It's a long, he's benefiting from the long tail of having a huge catalog, and there's no doubt about that. And his world is about to come upside down, right? His world with Suno and others like it, like we talked about last week on this show, the ability to generate short song clips with lyrics out of AI, commoditized in any way. If he's not doing it, and he probably is, he's probably starting that process, I have to imagine. Somebody else is. I know people are, because I see it on TikTok and I see it on Spotify as well. And so that, it's going to be really interesting to see how Spotify and YouTube and all that start to mitigate some of that stuff. I just think they'll have to start to deprecate some of that stuff in search, because it's like the books. It's like books in Amazon right now. The world of eBooks on Amazon is so awful right now that it takes weeks, months to get your ebook through Amazon's process, because there's just a flood of AI generated books getting in there, even, and to the point of where they're stealing ideas, and there's these flood of false books. It's awful.
They're having a difficult time managing that as well to go through, but they will figure it out on the Suno part. So you brought that up last week, which was great. And I talked to my youngest about this, and we were talking about Suno.
Yeah.
And he creates short songs of his friends, about his friends, and roasts them and sends
them. Exactly.
He thinks it's the greatest thing ever. So he'll do a little thing, it'll create a song, and he'll send it off.
Totally.
Like, oh my God. Thank you. So we've created a good person in the world.
It's fun. It's very much like that thing that, I can't remember the name of the group that used to do it, where you could literally upload your photos and it would make a little video of your sort of bobbleheady sort of guys.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. What's the name of that? Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, though.
All right.
That's crazy.
All right. Mine's very, very, we're done.
Want to hear yours again.
No, I know
you want to keep talking, and I know you talk most of these podcasts, like you dominate most of the conversations, but you can only have one rave.
That's only a little bit true. All right. What do you got? Tell me what you got this week.
We're getting ready for Content Entrepreneur Expo, May 5th to 7th. I'm reviewing presentation, including yours, which I'm sure I will have no edits to.
You haven't seen it yet because I haven't uploaded it. And the good team over there has been very, 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 very responsibly nagging me for it. And I have been unresponsive, so I apologize to the CEX team in advance.
That's all right. I vouched for you and said,
okay,
that you
great.
Will
it's going to
be
fine.
There, and you will have some.
It's
going to
be
presentation.
It's not your fault. I love it. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Anybody listening to this on the Goodwill Hunting? I'm like that's from a movie. It's Goodwill Hunting. Robin Williams. Yes. Very good. So I'm working on that. We've got 2.5 weeks to go. I'm really excited.
It's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
This is going to be a really, really great event in a brand new, I think they're going to be done, Hotel Cleveland, remodeled everything at the Renaissance downtown. So it's going to be sweet. What do you got going on?
I got more client work to do. So I'm super psyched about that. And honestly, finishing my presentation. That's job number one. I got to finish my CEX presentation and get it off to the good team there so that I'm got that off my to-do list. But yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Perfect. Great show. Right on.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. It's so wonderful to have you. We will see you again next week, and before we see you again next week, just remember, everybody, it's your story to tell. Tell it well. We'll see you next week on This Old Marketing. Hey, thanks a lot for making it this far in this week's episode, and thank you all for being a part of This Old Marketing. You can check out all the show notes of what we talked about today at thisoldmarketing.com, and it's also where you can leave us a review or a voicemail. We need those reviews and comments on whichever platform you follow us on. And if you haven't followed the podcast, please go do that and make sure you catch the latest and greatest episodes every Friday morning. We're on Apple and Spotify and all your other favorite podcatchers, of course, but we'd love it if you went over and subscribe to us on YouTube. That's right, YouTube. YouTube.com/@thisoldmarketing. We'll see you again next week, folks, with another episode of This Old Marketing.